Support for Aspen Public Radio comes from Balcom & Green PC, a full-service law firm with offices in Glenwood Springs, Aspen, and Basalt, providing advice and solutions for their clients' legal needs throughout Western Colorado for more than 60 years. Learn more at balcomgreen.com.
Welcome to Valley Roundup. I'm Carolyn Zachariasen. The State Patrol and the Colorado Department of Transportation are setting new speed limits in Glenwood Canyon. And our bad behavior, both citizens and government, is hurting Aspen's bear population.
The no selfie campaign that the police department is promoting, I think, is a very good campaign, but at the same time, it's hard to diminish the human interest in wildlife.
Also, development plans for a new base village and a revamped snowmass center are being unveiled.
I think there's a lot of pent-up demand after all these years of inactivity. I mean, the Viceroy Hotel was the last project, really major project, completed in the base area, and that was 2009.
Finally, Congressman Scott Tipton was in Glenwood Springs talking about DACA. That's the Obama-era policy that protects children who are brought here illegally. Tipton says he supports a compassionate approach.
Tipton articulated the idea of mass deportations. It would not be good for our economy, would not be good for businesses, would not be good for our culture.
All that and more coming up on Valley Roundup. Thank you for joining me. I've got David Krause, the editor of the Aspen Times, in the studio, along with Madeline Osberger. She is the contributing editor at the Aspen Daily News. And on Skype, I have Randy Essex. He is the publisher and editor of the Glenwood Post Independent. Thanks for joining me.
Great to be here.
Thank you, Carolyn.
Glad to join.
Great. Randy, you Glenwood Springs hosted Scott Tipton. Was he in town this past week for a town hall?
It was a Glenwood Springs Chamber event, and Bob Rankin was there with him as well.
Right. So you guys covered that. And it was the topic of conversation that you all wrote about was his position on DACA.
Yeah, I think like Cory Gardner and many other Colorado Republican politicians, Tipton articulated what is honestly kind of a realistic policy, that the idea of mass deportations would not be good for our economy, would not be good for businesses, would not be good for our culture and many of our communities. And he talked about Trump's order repealing DACA as an opportunity for Congress to address the larger questions of immigration reform, which it hasn't been able to do in the past. And honestly, I would expect that if Congress heads down that road, we get to March and there's not a bill, I would be really surprised if there were any larger reforms that make progress in Congress. And I guess I'm personally hopeful that they come up with that the 2017 DREAM Act sponsored in the Senate, which both Cory Gardner and Mike Bennett are co-sponsors of, could go through as a simple bill. But just because it has so much impact here, you know, we'll see what happens with that.
What was Scott's comments regarding it? Did he say he understood there needs to be some compassion when it comes to the individuals who are here, but 20 years from now, let's not have this happen again, where there's teenagers who are wondering what their status is?
Sure, and that goes with the whole let's secure the border idea that everybody says, you know, first we have to have border security, and the idea being that if you can truly secure the border, and I don't claim to be an expert on that, but I think we all know that it's improbable, then you won't have people who are in this situation, you know, 10 or 15 years from now, where somebody who's brought into the country 3 years from now under the new law as a four-year-old is still here when they're 18 or 20 years old and don't have citizenship. By the way, I want to use this opportunity to plug a public forum that we're having next Tuesday the 26th at the Glenwood Library. We have Tom Jankowski, the Garfield County Commissioner, Rob Stein, the Roaring Fork School Superintendent, Sam Bernal, Spanish Language Radio Director, and five other people, including a guy who's covered by DACA, at a forum. And our central question is, what would be the right immigration policy for Garfield County? Of course, Garfield County doesn't have an immigration policy, but what would be the right thing for Congress to do for our region? I think that should be good.
What time is the forum?
It is at 6:30 on Tuesday, the 26th.
Great.
Thank you.
Yeah. Did Scott talk about anything else in this chamber event on Monday?
You know, healthcare came up. I wasn't there myself. John Stroud, our reporter, was there. And I'm sure that Tipton said that Obamacare has to be repealed and replaced, as has been his position.
The other headline that you had, Randy, was regarding some new speed limit and other traffic control methods or policies that they're instituting in the Glenwood Canyon. I read the press release and I could not decipher what exactly they were doing. There was lots of words like mitigation.
To boil that down,
which is our jobs, right?
The speed limit through the canyon, according to the fixed signs that are there, is 50 miles an hour. They're taking those out. They're putting in real-time weather sensors. They're putting in sensors to monitor traffic, and putting in, I don't remember the exact number, but variable, so electronic speed limit signs that will be responsive to the weather conditions and the traffic. And if it's sunny and dry, the speed limit through most of the canyon will be 60 miles an hour, of course, except in construction zones. And I have to assume that they're going to want people to slow down for some of the curves there. And then when it is icy but not closed, the speed limit can drop as low as 30 miles per hour. And, of course, CDOT has a big control center above the tunnel in the Glenwood Canyon. So they're, in addition to these electronic automatic sensors, they monitor several cameras that they have, and they will have control over the speed limit and closures and so forth. So whether people pay any attention to it or not is a wholly different question. But the idea is to be giving drivers some real-time guidance going through the canyon.
David?
I think that's the key, right, Randy, is you can say it's 30 miles an hour, but people are going to get up in the 45 and 50. So I think the patrol side of things is more key to that canyon than anything else. I don't think, you know, even when it was posted 50, that was hard to do, 50 miles an hour in that canyon, except for on some of those curves. So I think a lot of it to me is you're going to drop it to 30, but then you need to have more patrol out there.
Yeah, certainly.
Do you know what the impetus was for this?
You know, I assume that, I mean, they've had a number of accidents. We ran a picture with the story of an accident last January that had vehicles really stacked up, for 2 or 3 hours it took to clear them out of there, and that's without a rock slide. And I think that they do look at, well, where are our trouble spots and where can we invest some money to, you know, it's a different solution, for example, than what they've done closer to Denver, where they have the express lane and where they added the twin tunnels to try to ease traffic flow there. It's a different problem and it's a different solution, but they're always working on how to move cars along I-70 as efficiently as possible.
Was speed cited in that the accident last week where the pigs died, that very sad crash? I didn't know if that
speed
was.
He wasn't. The guy, the truck driver, lost control as he came out of the no-name tunnel and I think hit the left guardrail and then came back across and tipped over. They didn't say he was going too fast, and to be honest, at this point, we haven't sought any information on whether there was a ticket.
David?
You know, I think going back, though, to the enforcement side, 2 years ago in an April snowstorm coming out of the Eisenhower Tunnel, my kids and I were at the front side of a guy going 50 miles an hour in a snowstorm. Bing, next thing you know, we're in a 29-vehicle pileup, and it closed the highway for 4 hours. So luckily, we were on the front side, and it was totally a speed thing. I looked over, and I said, what is this guy doing? And then all of a sudden, boom, he hit, sideswiped a car in front of us, and it was 19 cars and 12, you know, tractor trailers. And so you get this, these people that think when they're in, you know, I hate to say that, you know, stereotypical SUV driver, but you get people, the guy was in a red Jeep, I'll never forget it, a red four-door Rubicon, brand new, new plates, going 60 miles an hour in a snowstorm downhill in April. And so that's it. That's, you know, CSP does a good job of being out there, but I think in these snow situations, they really have to have a greater enforcement and just a greater presence when we're going to do things like this.
You know, another reason that they might be looking at some additional real-time weather stuff is around the country, and including in on I-70 near Glenwood just recently, these kind of sudden snow squalls that just very quickly put down a glaze of snow have caused a lot of these multiple vehicle accidents lately. I think actually that was the case last January in the canyon. And we've had some of those just west of Glenwood Springs too, which is actually a surprisingly dangerous part of the highway. From, I think people get out of the canyon and they're through the mountain passes, and the speed limit goes up to 75 on that stretch from Glenwood to Utah, and they think they can really hit it. And there's still a lot of traffic, and it's still pretty dangerous. We actually did a data story last year that showed that that has a disproportionately high number of fatalities.
That was Randy Essex, the publisher and editor of the Aspen or the Glenwood Post-Independent. I'm Carolyn Zachariasen. You're listening to Valley Roundup. I will now continue our conversation with David Krause. He's the editor of the Aspen Times. And Madeline Osberger, she's the contributing editor at the Aspen Daily News. Let's move on to the conversation of bear activity. In the Valley and in Aspen, there's been quite a bit of it. And there's bad behavior on all fronts. I know you passed on a story on Wednesday that was pitched to you. It's not a real, it's not a big story, but it was one that I posted something on Facebook. I'll call it citizen journalism at this point, since I was acting in my role as a tenant in a building that's across from the library, and the library has been is run by Pitkin County, and they have been doing a very, very poor job of containing their trash. And so I watched a bear eat out of their bins for about an hour, and then nobody cleaned it up. And then another bear came through about 4 hours later, about 2 hours before the garbage truck came. And they corrected it very quickly. I got a lot of quick response, and I'm not sure I would have if I had not posted that on social media. And they also said they self-reported to the city and said that we failed to secure our trash. There was headlines last week about the family of bears that was, they were up a tree on the Hyman Avenue Mall, and the ridiculous behavior of tourists and locals in trying to get photos with these bears. And they were relocated. David, you got any commentary on that? Or
Well, you know, I've been coming up here for 20-some years. You guys have lived here a lot longer than I have, but I followed the bear situation throughout Colorado for a long time, and to see it this close up, I think is very interesting. I'm lucky enough to live in town on the East End, and there's a lot of activity over there as well. So, you know, I think it's hard. The no selfie campaign that the police department is promoting, I think, is a very good campaign, but at the same time, it's hard to diminish the human interest in wildlife. And that's where a lot of us come up here for. And I don't disagree that we can't be, you know, standing around taking a gazillion pictures and talking loud. But at the same time, the human curiosity of bear, you know, especially for visitors, is very intriguing. So it's that fine line, right? Can I stop as a citizen and take a picture and take 10 seconds and not yell at the bear? Or, you know, should I get cited for walking through the Hyman Mall and seeing three bears and stopping for, you know, 10 seconds to take a picture. So I think the situation last week on Thursday, I think, when it really escalated and then they finally...
Press release came out.
The press release came out about the bears, but then we went out, you know, it's so close to our office, we just went out to take a couple of pictures, and I asked one of the wildlife officers there, you know, they started moving people back, and that's when they said we're going to have to tranquilize them because it's becoming a disruption. And the other part of that, and you have to give props to Annette's and to Hops, is they lost some business.
I was going
to
say,
you know, that was a very
seating.
The outdoor seating for them at that time of year with Rugger Fest going on, and they gave up the beer garden and, you know, Annette's tableside stuff outside. I mean, that's, you know, that's lost business revenue. Now, is that a reason to tranquilize bears and move them?
I hope not.
But at the same time, the disruption became such to a point between people trying to take the pictures and all that, that it just became a situation. So I think it's an interesting balance. I really do.
Right. We are in their territory.
Right.
They're not in Hops and Annette Bakery's territory, although they kind of are. And that's, and I should say, you know, going back to my situation, it came up at a county commissioner meeting. One of the commissioners was very responsive to my Facebook post, and then it was brought up in a public meeting. And, you know, my question is, you know, if government isn't going to lead by example, then how is everybody else going to do it?
Right.
And the other part of that is when that bear was eating out of the garbage, it was 9 o'clock at night. Aspen police officer came through that ramp, it's against the parking garage ramp, and he flashed the light on the bear, and he stomped his foot and said, "Get out of here, bear." And the bear was like, looked at him and just kept eating, and the cop left. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know what the policy or what the right move response is. Do you let the bear continue to eat the garbage, or do you beanbag it? Shoot a beanbag at it, and then just have it move down on the road.
To the next dumpster.
What's the policy? Madeline, what's your thoughts on
this?
Well,
I know there are two dumpsters in the alley behind the Aspen Daily News, and they're very popular feeding spots. And when I come out, like last night at 1 in the morning, I'm looking both ways and kind of creeping around to get to my car because I don't know if I'm going to come across another bear like I do frequently at night. I mean... There's a normalcy that I don't feel we should take for granted. I was speaking to one of your employees yesterday, Carolyn, and mentioned that when I don't want to take the bus home at night and have to walk from 82 because there's a lot of creatures. And he really made fun of me. He's like, "Oh, they're not going to bother you." And it's like, you know, I'm walking on a dark road. There are I've come across mountain lion. And I've come across last night their coyote. And, of course, you know, the ubiquitous bears. Mm-hmm. I think if the police are going to have to get a little more, maybe be ticketing people more often or something. I don't know. There's a lot of offenders. I see a lot of dumpsters that are not compliant.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think, you know, every morning when I walk from the east side of town into my office, I like to kind of walk through the alley just to kind of see how many dumpsters are knocked over. And there'll be anywhere from 6 to 8 of the waste management ones. Now they'll knock them over, and the ones that are locked, they'll move on. But there are many, including in my complex, where until I finally said, "Can't we get a couple of 39-cent carabiners to fix this problem?" And the problem in our area has been solved. But I think that's a really good point that you bring up, is at some point, perhaps the police department needs to figure out a policy on how are we going to start ticketing people for these trash offenses, because that's the root of everything.
Right.
It's not people stopping to take a picture of a bear. You know, that's not the biggest issue. To me, the biggest issue is not ticketing people who repeatedly are leaving their trash unlocked.
Right. And then it's however the police wants to respond to the bears themselves.
Right.
Because it seems like they should be hazing them.
Right.
But they're not all the time, and maybe they just didn't want to deal with it that night. I don't know. But
well, you know, I listen to the scanner in the office. It's, you know, we
bear,
keep it
bear,
on all
bear,
the time.
Bear, bear,
and
bear.
Right now, those guys, you could put 10 people on the police department. I mean, one guy's trying to respond to a bear, and there's three more in the way, you know? And so it's just one of those situations where at what point in a season, if it's going to be a high season like this year, where the berries up in, you know, we had a weird frost and the food wasn't as readily available, and that's why they're coming down this year, like they did, what, in 12 or 11 when there was a big bear push. So I think, you know, maybe that's it. Is it one of these beanbag things, or is it, you know, how do you haze them? It's not like coyotes where you can just yell at them or do something. You don't want to throw a rock at a bear. No. I mean, you don't want to, you know, the whole thing is yell bear or blow the whistle. You know,
it didn't work that night.
And that because they become so accustomed to it.
Right.
And so I think that's the greater issue is, do we really need to see about really, you know, policing, like you said, citizen policing, but then also incoming on the police to walk the alleys like we do in the morning or walk the back streets and see how many things are dumped over.
Right.
Well, maybe there should be a bear task force, people really assigned to that. Not that there's extra money for that, but it is.
We have tons of money.
Critical.
We're rolling in money.
Well, but I think that's a really good point. I mean, you get some people with Parks and Wildlife, you know, and what's the best practices? And do we need to start, you know, helping our police department, or they help us on, you know, there's something to be said for these bear campaigns that they're doing and the signs and all that, which I think is a great first level of communication. But the next level of communication has to be warnings and then fines, because nobody's going to buy that 39-cent carabiner until they really get pushed.
Right.
They're actually $2 now. I just bought a carabiner.
Did you?
They're not 39 cents anymore.
We got the cheap one. So okay. These aren't like you could, you know. I think these are for your keys and less.
Randy, how much are carabiners in Glenwood?
You know, I think the bears have been deterred by all the traffic. So.
Right. I was going to say, are you having an issue down there?
Carbondale.
In Glenwood.
We did a story that... bear activity in Carbondale, which sort of oddly hasn't had as much as Glenwood in past years. The city went around and put tags on all the garbage cans, all the dumpsters and so forth, and issued a warning. I just made a note in this conversation that we need to follow up and see if there have been tickets issued, but I live there. And honestly, I haven't heard of a lot of activity. I think, you know, we don't have the tourist traffic, certainly in Carbondale, that you do in Aspen.
You have restaurants
and
bars.
I was highly amused by the warning to not take bear selfies. Carbondale people struggle a little bit.
Two press releases came out on that.
Yeah.
It's the same press release, but a week later. Yeah. I'm going to break here and say that was Randy Essex. He's the editor and publisher of the Glenwood Post Independent. I'm Carolyn Sakariasen, host of Valley Roundup. We're going to continue our conversation with David Krause. He's the editor of the Aspen Times, and Madeline Osberger. She is the contributing editor at the Aspen Daily News. Okay, moving on. I want to get to the development of snowmass. There's a lot going on there.
Oh, my gosh.
There was five headlines.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Regarding what's going on there. Madeline, well, why don't you give us a 30-second version here,
okay.
Update.
I think there's a lot of pent-up demand after all these years of inactivity. I mean, the Viceroy Hotel was the last project, really major project, completed in the Base Area, and that was 2009.
So I got a couple questions there. Okay. So just I'll say they've got a base village that they're starting to resurrect again. The Viceroy, for some reason, has got to do an update, even though it seems like it's pretty nice to me. And then the Snowmass Mall or Center needs to be, Center needs to be updated. And why do they need more free market housing there?
Well, what I found interesting about the Snowmass Center application was the free market housing. There are no monster homes attached. There's a lot of what I'm seeing as maybe upper end, but not totally unaffordable for people who are managers in Aspen and Snowmass. That's what I'm guessing. I don't know any of the price points yet, but it's 2 and 3 bedroom primarily condos that are the free market component. And then there are 10 or 11 deed restricted, which is rather paltry. And I think that'll get negotiated out. We'll see.
Right.
But I don't think you're going to see crazy prices attached to those units at the Snowmass Center. I could be wrong, but that's the sense I'm getting. Jordan Sarek, the main owner of the project, and he has a partner, Rob Cairncross, I think he's going to price it so he can get some of those upper management types to buy those units.
Right. The ones that are running the development further up.
Yeah, exactly.
The ones that are working for East West.
Yeah, they need a place to live too, Carolyn.
Yeah, so... David?
But what I think is important here as these things start to reinvigorate themselves is you are coming on to the 50th anniversary of the resort. And so I think knowing that they have a high profile, this is the time for them to say, hey, the next 50 years, what's it going to look like? And there are going to be a lot of people coming through, especially with this one day when they're doing $6.50 lift tickets, right? You're going to get a large crowd of people coming through who might not come through there. Mm-hmm. But I think in the year that you're celebrating your 50th anniversary, you don't want to be look stagnant, you know, and have these spots that look built up and then all of a sudden stop. So I think it's part of that whole reinvigorating sense in Snowmass that I think is really coming along. And I think that whole shopping area that, you know, this proposal, I think, you know, I've been going there a long time. I like that market. A lot of people, you know, a lot of out-of-towners use that little spot. And so it needs to be updated in this whole race of, you know, what resorts are doing. I mean, you look at, you know, what went on this summer with all the buy-ups and, you know, what Aspen Ski Co's doing. And, you know, I think it goes in hand with all of that is you need to take care of your base here while you're doing that other thing. And I think it's very important. And I think they're showing that, you know, all right, we need to get this thing figured out with East West and Ski Co and all that. And then to have the town center redeveloped as well, it just looks like, oh man, look at that. Right. At the top of the road, there's a lot of activity going on.
I think that it's going to be an interesting review process because Alyssa Schenck, one of the five counselors, has to recuse herself because her husband is on the legal team. And you need a supermajority vote. So it's going to have to be unanimous, 4 out of 4 of the remaining, because there's height, you know, they're going over height,
yeah,
and there's another reason.
Sure,
and such always
things outside of the
always say as a negotiation ordinance tool, probably.
Sure.
But that'll be interesting to see how that's reviewed. And this, I don't expect this to be a quick process, David.
But maybe by then they'll decide if there's going to be a pot shop in there.
Yeah, maybe.
Not because, in the town center.
Right?
that may be on the mall. I don't know. That's an interesting question. I think the town really has cold feet. And if that's the case, then say no.
They describe Snowmass Center as what they want. It's Snowmass's Main Street. That's where the liquor store is, post office, grocery store. Hopefully, Tasters can make it through, because he's getting the boot in the city of Aspen. So hopefully, his location will remain there.
Well, it's not going to be in that building because that part of the building's going.
And then, as far as Base Village is concerned, their issue is what to fill the community building with, right? And we don't have to get into it too much, but my advice is to stop calling it Building 6 would be helpful. Like, let's call it something else. Let's call all those buildings something else. Give them an identity. And the council is trying to solicit public interest on what ought to go in that building, right?
Yes. Yes.
The community building, I'm going to call it, not Building 6.
And it's ironic because the construction is continuing to move forward, even though they don't have a use for that space. I don't know if at some point they're going to call it and just say, hey, would you please halt? Even though it'll be difficult to finish this out when there's other buildings surrounding it, maybe the best idea would be just to stop until we can figure out what it's going to be used for. I mean, Harry Teague, architect, a beautiful plan for the Discovery Center, but that all went away when ACES, I mean, it didn't all go away. If they can come up with another partner, but to come up with that kind of fundraising ability, 8 to 10 million, that's a tall order right now.
That was Madeline Osberger, contributing editor of the Aspen Daily News. Thanks to her and my other guest this week in the studio, David Krause, editor of the Aspen Times, along with Randy Essex, editor and publisher of the Glenwood Post Independent, speaking with us via Skype. I'm Carolyn Zachariasen, and you've been listening to Valley Roundup. You can get a rundown of links and more information on the stories covered on this show on our website, aspenpublicradio.org. Valley Roundup is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.